Austin's home to a lot of weird stuff. Austin Bat tributes, floating marching bands, Hippie Hollow. Keeping it weird is one of the city's mottos, after all. In his new book, Dreams and Shadows, Austin author Robert Cargill delves deep into the dark heart of the city's inner weirdness, using a little myth and legend as punctuation for a truly unique story. Robert Cargill joins me now. Thank you so much for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
You gave me permission just to call you by your last name.
That's all anybody calls me. Nobody calls me by my first name or my middle name. Everybody calls me Cargill. It's my wife, people I work with. It's something people have called me since high school. So I feel weird when anybody calls me anything different. Occasionally, I'll run into people who are like, "Oh, Christopher," "Oh, Robert," and it's like, "Who are you?" I don't know. No, that's not me.
Okay, good to know. Well, let's start off with your plot. I recognize some Irish folk legend.
Mm-hmm.
Some gothic.
Yeah.
A little live music.
Yeah.
A lot of dark soul.
Yeah.
How'd you come up with that?
The entire genesis of the book came from I was reading a poem by John Donne, Song, which is his most famous one, you know, Get With Child of Mandrake Root. It inspired me to want to tell a story, a fantasy story from a children's perspective, and just the whole story kind of evolved from there. And what I eventually ended up doing was kind of, I wanted to create a world out of all the folklore, myth, and legend that I'd been fascinated with for years. And just all the various legends from scattered throughout, you know, the world, because essentially mythology is, you know, religion that somebody doesn't believe anymore. I mean, that's really what it is. And most of our fantasy comes from telling adventure stories or tragedies through other people's religions. And I was just fascinated by that idea and kind of wanted to bring all that together and bring folklore into one kind of grand unified theory of a possible world where all of this folklore actually could exist. And when that happened, and I was trying to work on the setting for the book, I, you know, eventually came to that thing that every writer, you know, gets told at some point in time is write what you know. And it's like, why set this in some, you know, a large metropolitan city like, you know, New York or Chicago or Los Angeles or fictionalized?
Well, they do have good gargoyles up there.
They do. They do. And it's really, you know, there's some really inspirational architecture. I got to live in New York for a while 2 years ago while working on Sinister, and I love it there. But it came back to, you know, I love Austin so much, and it's got such a great, rich feel and history and look and just vibe. And I'd realized that I'd never read anything, you know, especially in the urban fantasy genre that was set in Austin and that used Austin as a centerpiece. And I was like, well, Austin has this is kind of a great eclectic piecemeal culture that fits very much with what I'm trying to do with, you know, putting together all this piecemeal folklore. And so the two kind of things just gelled together and became what it is.
With that kind of introduction, you have to give me a tiny sliver of the plot.
It's essentially about two young boys who are introduced through supernatural means when they're 7 and 8 years old, and they become fast friends, and there's something not right with one of them, it ends up they have a small little adventure of their own when they're kids that kind of bonds them together, and then the second half of the book takes place when they're adults, and it's about how everything they did as children kind of messed them up as adults, and they still have, you know, these things lingering in them, and then these things they dealt with, these supernatural creatures, come back for them, and they have to deal with their past, and one of them remembers it, you know, remembers it very well, and then one can't remember a detail of it. He was abducted by fairies and can't remember anything about his childhood, and so as it all starts coming back to him with exposure to the fairies, he starts to become unhinged, and his friend tries to help keep him together while dealing with all these kind of fantasy adventure elements.
So, as you pointed out, Austin is actually a really big player in the book, as is its music scene.
Oh, yeah.
But it's not the scene I'd venture a lot of us would recognize.
Yeah, yeah. It's a lot of my Austin, you know. There's a horrible apartment complex in there that is a complex I lived in while my wife was in college here at UT. And, you know, there's a lot of just kind of smaller areas and little parts of Sixth Street. And just it was all the things that kind of spoke to me about the city that I felt that, you know, the dark things would hide. You know, the places, you know, where supernatural creatures would linger, you know, the various awnings where you'd see angels perched, things like that. And that was the kind of, you know, it's the Austin that exists in my head. You know, we all kind of have our own different views of the city, and mine just happens to involve supernatural creatures. So
let me ask you a dumb question. Last couple of years been sort of fairly unrelenting sunlight, bright, cloudless skies. And yet, you know, how do you go to that dark place with all that sunshine?
Well, I'm a night person, and I've always been an Austin night person. You know, I used to work late nights here. I mean, my first year in town was spent working the night shift over at I Love Video, working till 3 in the morning. You know, go home, watch some movies, go to bed at like 6, 7 in the morning, and I've kind of kept that schedule. So for me, Austin is a night city. And I deal with Austin at night. In the daytime, Austin, the bright, shiny, cloudless one, you know, in this terrible drought that we're wrestling with, is something that I hear everybody else complain about. I'm usually in my, you know, office writing at that point in the day, when it's really bright. And then at night is when I, you know, go out and have coffee with my friends and kind of experience the city. So that's where I see them. You know, I'm the one out at night, you know, dealing with, you know, the night people, as a famous DJ once used to remark about that set, and those are my people. So,
well, you're well known around town for your work for Ain't It Cool News, mm-hmm. and you alluded to one of your other careers, which was writing a film.
Oh, screenwriting. Yeah,
screenwriting.
Yeah, I wrote last year's film Sinister.
And what else you have going on?
Well, those are, you know, that's
two small things.
What else can you have going on but screenwriting and novel writing?
Another screenplay in the works?
Oh,
another novel in the works?
Yeah. We're working on Deus Ex right now, the adaptation of the video game. And that's going very well. And that project's moving very quickly. Worked on another project last year, an adaptation of a great cyberpunk novel called When Gravity Fails. I, of course, right now I'm working on the sequel to this, to Dreams and Shadows, and then just other writing projects. I've got a just kind of a big barrel of stuff. I love sitting in my office writing all day. And so, no doubt that you'll see a handful of things, leak out from me over the next few years.
Cargill, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Emily Donahue with KUT News.